Hello, and welcome to One Track Mind. I'm your host, Nikki. This show is geared towards all my musicians out there who don't know how to record your songs. I'm here to help you get your music out of your room and into the world for everyone to hear. I'm going to take you through the basics of what you need to know to record, mix, and master your music. Today's show starts at the beginning. You're a musician and you have songs you want to record. Pre-production is the work you do before going into the studio. I think this stage is most important. I've brought on three guests today to prove my point.
Hi, my name is Ryan Edwards. I am an audio engineer and sound designer and musician when I can.
When time allows.
Hopefully, yeah. My background, my study in college was theatrical sound design. So I started off in live audio and design as well. But I ended up getting out of college and doing post-production for TV commercials, radio commercials, and small budget films for the last
stuff that pays the bills.
Stuff that pays the bills for the last 6 years. So that's primarily what my my expertise is on, if at any, is mastering, sweetening, and post-production for TV.
Well, I will definitely have you back on my show for my mastering. Today is all about pre-production and everything that you do before you do. All the work you do before the work happens is probably one of the most important parts as far as I'm concerned. So I want to know what's important to you, how you do it, and why you do it.
What's important to me? I like to work with artists if I can to make music that that would make me move. I'm not much of a guy who dances, but something that makes me move, kind of jiggle, bob my head to it, if you will. Something that gives me emotion, or perhaps makes me feel an emotion.
You feel a groove. You're like, get into it.
Yeah, something like that. That's if I'm lucky enough to work on a project like that, I'm happy. As I said, most of the stuff I've worked on is post-production. I'm not grooving a lot to guys talking over tracks, but it's something I wake up every day and, far from dread, actually enjoy. And if you enjoy what you do, you're going to wake up all that much earlier to
It really just puts the icing on the cake, right?
Yeah. if you're lucky enough to be audio inclined as we are and have a job, especially perhaps in the LA area, it doesn't matter though, but are doing it day to day, that's the best practice in and out, is being able to
absolutely do it. You know, it's keeping it local on more of a local tip. There's a lot of interesting stuff just in the Valley. I mean, you yourself work out of Calabasas. My studio's in North Hills. So it's all very Valley oriented, which is good because my listeners are all very local. It's, you know, we're all in the San Fernando Valley and we're all trying to make it work. And so it would be cool to reach some artists that, you know, are locally driven and, you know, to pass the wealth around, so to speak.
Right now is the best time to be a musician. There's more options and more ability to record whatever your budget is, especially with, you know, friends. I think that's the best thing ever, is if you have friends who do it, then it's something fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So to your listeners, find a friend, find a buddy who, you know, even if they're just starting out, work with them. You'll both get better at everything you do. If you are guitarist, you'll get better at recording guitar. Your friend who's an engineer will get better at being an engineer. There's no downside. You'll both make mistakes along the way, but you don't try. Never going to find out what you can do.
So, you know, the work you do before the work.
The pre-production.
As an engineer, what do you feel is important?
Well, pre-production, I know that your show is kind of framed around home recording, not necessarily, you know, million-dollar budgets, but million-dollar sound at whatever your dollar budget
Peanuts.
Is. Peanuts. whatever you can. But to get the best sound out of singer-songwriters, home studios, that's kind of what your audience is listening in for.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. I'd say when it comes to pre-production, a lot of it is building the space. If you don't already have the space you're recording in yet, you've got to make it into a proper space. There are certain things you have to do.
That's an interesting topic that I don't think has been touched on yet by, you know, anyone I've talked to, is the proper space. That's huge.
The space you're recording in, the room you're recording in, and the room you're listening to, your control room, both need to be treated. And you need to be aware of how they sound before and after and treat them properly. So pre-production is everything from owning the right gear, or owning the gear that you're comfortable with, or will get the job done that you're hired for, or whatever. And knowing the space. And then if the space needs to be fixed, acoustically treated, which most spaces do, they're not usually, in most cases for home studios, we don't have a vocal booth built into our houses. We don't have a sound stage. So we need to create those spaces to get the right sound, whether it's completely dead, slightly live, you know. This is why I clap my hands, but that was the cans on right now. I don't want to blow our eardrums out.
Oh, I do appreciate it. So, you know, but that's all very true. And, you know, knowing the sound you want going into the room and realizing what's possible for that room. You know, you go in there, see what's wrong with it, and then figure out the whole thing.
Be realistic. You need to look at your budget, and you need to know what is realistically possible. Let's say you have a small bedroom or performance area, and you want to get you know, the best isolation possible. Well, unless you're going to tear down the walls, or unless you've built that place yourself, you're going to have to work within the confines of the walls that are already there, treat those, and work with that. So have a reasonable expectation. You know, you're not going to treat a room that's, you know, you're not going to get 100% isolation almost ever, unless, of course, you have the big budget. But 50% is much better than none. Try to find that. And again, whatever's in your budget will help dictate what is reasonable and
absolutely. You know, something that I don't know if I've necessarily I know I've considered it, but it's something hard to do is a budget and knowing your budget. Like, how would you lay that out? How would you necessarily figure that out and in what's realistic?
Well, now, see, that's where the kind of juxtaposition of trying to be realistic and then being an engineer and knowing how many things you want to own and how many things sound great and what other you know, pieces of equipment you've heard in someone else's studio and go, well, I need that.
Yeah.
So your budget is what you can work with. You know, your studio shouldn't be a money pit. Once you have more coming through the door, if it's for clients, if it's for business versus for personal pleasure, you know, once you have a money coming in the door, then you can start to make improvements. But for home studio, start with minimal to what you need. Get exactly specific and try to make things work. You know, you can, in audio, I say be specific, but I mean, get the things that are tailored. So you get a preamp that's built for voice. It doesn't mean it's just only for voice. It means it sounds really good on voices, but it could, in fact, sound really good as a direct in for a guitar or bass. Play with everything. But,
you know what you can offer them, too. You know, yeah. It's like if you have a room that would be great for vocals, know that it's a vocal room.
Sure.
Going into it. Don't expect to record drums in it.
Yes.
Expect to record vocals.
An awareness of everything, acoustic and otherwise limitations, is your best friend. I think pragmatic is the right term.
Yes.
Being an engineer, and that will help. That will just be a big help across the board. But the Top Gun pre-production. Once you have your spaces acoustically treated, or once you have the sounds you want, whatever comes first, then you move on to the electronics. You know, but
in here, not like I'm pushing Pro Tools. Mm. But I could be pushing Pro Tools. I definitely am a lover of the Pro Tools and do hope that, you know, my listeners out there agree with me.
I think anyone who's worked with Pro Tools in the last 10 years will say it is a love-hate relationship, but that in the last 10 years, it's also leaned more towards love. It's 20 years of it. This year is actually the 20th anniversary of Pro Tools. I realized that the other day.
That says a lot just on its own.
It's become the industry standard for many reasons. Not only ease, but compatibility. Being able to hand off a session to someone else and everything being the same. You know, from the old days of recording, you would, however you transfer it, every studio was different. There was, you know, whether they had the same 2-inch tape machine or the same preamps, there was no real continuity. There was, here's my 2-inch tape, you throw it on your machine, you listen through your speakers.
Unification, this really aided that.
It definitely has. Everyone can, you know, there's ups and downs to everything, but the unification, the ability to, the cross-platform, even too, although PCs aren't really represented that much by Pro Tools. They are there. There are, I'm sure, one or two of you listening out there who have a PC. And to you, I'd ask why.
But and I would agree.
But whatever works for you. But in pre-production, once you are acquainted with your space, once you have the sound you want, you know, again, within budget, and that's a personal thing you got to find, you move on to the equipment. If you're a singer-songwriter and you're doing it for yourself, you get the appropriate stuff. You don't need to go and buy thousands of dollars worth of mics.
Right. You know, instead of getting your Neumann U87 mic for $5,000, you go and get, you know, a comparable mic. You know, look for a Rode mic, for example. I absolutely would endorse those.
Absolutely. You know what? It's really about your ears.
Yes.
But you've made me really just think about something. Even before you step in your studio, even before you purchase anything, a lot of this is research. And that's not just reading on the internet, although a lot of it is. You can read a lot of really good reviews on websites that have forums that are trusted and really get into the, you know, the real things about the equipment as opposed to the talking points and commercials. Beyond online reviews, you've really got to have hands-on, you know, whether that's, again, going in the stores and playing with the equipment, you know, whether it's a virtual instrument or a piece of rack gear or, you know, anything in between.
And stores are good about that. You stores know, Guitar Center, for example, you know, is really good about playing with their stuff.
I can tell you from firsthand that they have a development team working on putting together computers for the stores to show off all software. That is, you know, something that's become pretty big. Everyone can walk into a store and play guitar, but it's hard to walk into a store and play with software. That's going to be changing. You'll see that by December this year. I may have some insider knowledge.
Insider information here.
Info knowledge, no. Secret.
I love it. No, so, that's really awesome. That's all really good stuff. Let's keep our eyes open for that.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how much of your show is dedicated to building the studio, whether if you have one and improving it or building one, but acoustics are important. Researching the equipment and the things that you want to buy and or need, But then again, you're saying an awareness, being an engineer, you need to know what is going to work and what isn't, you know? So these are all things you find out over time. You practice. If you're lucky enough to be around other engineers, which you should be listening all the time. It's not a competition. We're not, you know, we're not the rock stars out there trying to be like, oh, I can play more guitar licks than you. You know, at the end of the day, a lot of engineers, and I think they should be, are should be collaborating and not necessarily hoarding trade secrets. We've all got our little things, but it's a secret society in a way that we should be sharing and giving back. And at the end of the day, no one wants to hear bad music.
It's so true. And I learned that from going to MI and being taught from people that are in the industry and are actually doing this and who have come up with their own trade secrets. It's like they're not holding them back. They're not saying, oh, this is what I've learned, and keeping it a secret. It's like, let me teach you what I've learned and what I've come up with so that you can better yourself for your own music. It's such a, it is very cliquish, but if you're in it, it's the information is so available to you. And really all you have to do is be around and ask.
And then of course, listen.
Exactly. Always have your ears open.
And always wear your ear protection.
Of course. Got to protect your ears. If I haven't some advice for anybody out there, get rid of your earbuds. Stop using those. Protect your ears.
Yeah. As fashionable as they are, I hope you don't make the wrong choice in that one.
It hurts. As an artist going into a studio, there are important things that, you know, you should have going in there. And one of which is your music done and known. And so what do you think about that? And what do you think is important for an artist?
An artist coming into a studio, whether you're paying for it or not, you should be prepared. You should be very, you know, very well aware of everything about your own music, as much as you can be. You don't have to have a background in music to write music, to create. Everyone's creating music nowadays, and that's a good thing, whatever your level is. But be prepared so that every moment in there counts, and every moment allows the engineer to give you the best of everything. You know, there's no guarantee, you know, that every engineer is going to be
No, you're good. Oh, okay. We've done 15 minutes.
Good. The whole idea of pre-production is to alleviate problems.
Exactly.
Save headaches and everything. I would say from the artist's perspective,
that's just something you can work in to say if you want to work that in, because I think that's a nice little.
All right. Well, I'm going to try to roll back into your question.
Yeah.
Pre-production for the artist really can entail a lot of things from like almost what I would consider mechanical, knowing your stuff, to being emotionally prepared, to being aware that the process of recording your music is not going to be necessarily how you perform it, and you have to get used to that. A lot of first-timer people in the studio will be a little confused by the stopping and starting of certain things, the fact that you may perform a vocal chunk on stage or in a song one way, but to record it properly, you're gonna have to do two or three takes. Say if you're a screamer, you're doing metal, whatever, you may have to sing one part and then go back and scream the thing later. Now if you haven't practiced that way, you get the studio, go, I've never done it that way, well, be aware that's something you're gonna have to change up.
That is so true. You know, like the process of recording is so different from just sitting there and, or you know, being on stage and playing a song that you've done. It's so different because it's not as linear as it can be. Sometimes you're gonna split up a vocal part if someone's screaming. You know, you're gonna want to get the singing parts done first, and then you're gonna want to tackle those really tough screaming vocals or, you know, the more powerful stuff later.
Absolutely, there are types of styles of music. Let's say if you're doing a live recording of a jazz band, that the performance is and everything they're doing, then you gotta do a little more pre-production and dial it in right, because you're getting one take. I mean, you're not only getting one take, but you're trying to lay down something that's a cohesive performance.
Right.
Where in most other
times, it's even trickier.
Very much. Where in most other situations, starting and stopping is better to get the best take, but it can also be jarring. So prepare yourself for the process, for the fact that people may ask you to do things slightly differently. Although you are the artist, they may suggest, or the producer or engineer suggests something to you. Be open to collaboration. You will find more roads to more music saying, let me try that, than to going, no, this is the way I want to do it. And you may end up loving the way you do it and sticking with it. But I think interaction with people behind the board, especially if there's someone that you trust there, second pair of ears, be prepared for that and try to work with it.
Absolutely. You know, and pre-production can also be the artist and the producer / engineer, if it is one person, or all three people sitting down together in a room and talking everything out and going over the song that you're going to be recording, you know, and sitting down and working through all these pieces first and getting to know what you need to know beforehand.
Whether it's on paper, doing paperwork, getting the notation together or things of that nature, or whether it's sitting down with just you, the acoustic guitar, and the producer and performing to him, or him or her, pardon me for saying.
Include us ladies in there.
It can be a multitude of things, but they're all important. But I'd say having the tone and all that, sitting down and all being on the same page, and something, you know, we may have already touched on or not, knowing the material. And that comes from both sides, that if the producer knows the material, they can support your vision better.
That is so true. It's all about supporting the vision, having, you know, everyone being as cohesive as possible to support this singular vision of that song, of this record, you know, of all of it.
Nice. Actually, if you don't mind, I want to jump back to pre-production from the engineer side, because the one thing you want for an artist to have when they step in is more or less, other than finding the vocal level or the level for the instrument, be able to hit record. You know, in the case where you're perhaps working with a vocalist or a rapper that can send you their loops, their tracks first, have that all set up, have those tracks ready. Leave almost nothing to be done in front of them except the record button and everything after that. They don't want to see that. Oh, they may be, you know, the artist may be interested to learn how it's done, but at the end of the day, them being able to breeze in and not have to wait on you will give them every ability to be creative within their own space. They're only themselves being limited by themselves.
That is so true. To be able to have the artist come in and to immediately be able to hit the record button when they're ready to go, it sets up the magic to happen.
You never say no.
Yes.
It's almost anticipating and to an obsessive degree, trying to figure out what the artist would need or would never want to almost interact with. And that's a little bit of psychology, in my opinion.
If you're
the producer engineer, that's where that psychology, that's where the, you know, let me make a comfortable space, the performance space. Everyone wants something different. You know, you coming in, someone's doing some metal, you put up some metal posters on the wall. I don't know. Pictures of
ambiance is huge, right?
Snap-on catalog. I don't know. But you have a singer songwriter, you have someone, you know, who's a little more low key. Maybe they want, you know, candles. So you put low light. Maybe you can't get fire in there, but there's a little bit of theater too.
Flameless candles.
Exactly. You don't have to change your space every time, but you can add a little accoutrement.
Definitely want to set an ambiance. You want to set a tone. You want to make them comfortable from the moment they walk in. You want to make them as comfortable as possible to be as creative and wonderful as possible.
Absolutely. Never be the choke point.
Yes. Never the engineer be the one that's holding someone back.
Hey, look, and we're all going to make many mistakes in our lives, and we're going to do them with people in the booth or in the room. But I think something that we can borrow from our friends on stage is that don't let them see us sweat.
Right.
You make a mistake, don't announce it.
Just keep going.
Give it an extra pause, give it an extra second. Don't be like, oh, now it's record enabled. These are a few things that, you know, it's my personal view. I've tried to, you know, sell it a little bit, but, you know, fake it until you make it. You're always going to hit the wrong button. You just don't have to tell everybody. So.
Exactly. You don't need to announce it to the world.
So now you got your room set up. Now you've got hopefully a good signal chain, good pair of monitors, which right there you could do a whole show of monitors, but those are crucial.
Oh, yeah.
You got to listen to a lot of those, get the right ones. Now you've got the recording booth or the whatever staging area set up for your client to come in. Next, you know, have it all, like we said, have it all loaded so that, boom,
you can just press that button.
And then you're recording and mixing.
Mm-hmm. I do know you have a passion for...
Some would say a fetish.
Some would go as far as to say a fetish. And, you know, I think I'll just let you take it from here. I'll let you explain yourself from here on out, buddy.
That's a pretty curious way to start a conversation. But what we're talking about right now is clean power.
The necessary clean power, so Ryan Edwards says.
I am a big advocate for many things. Avocado, bacon, and clean power. Although, don't mix the three. That's wrong. That's not one. So, clean power. Whether you're in a million-dollar studio or in your bedroom alone, the investment of clean power is going to give you a lot of great things. For anything like your preamps or anything that's amplifying, it's going to clean up any sort of ground loops. It's going to hopefully give you more headroom and overall improve the performance of all your equipment, whether it's analog or digital. Most clean power these days have sockets dedicated to each. For a small investment, upwards, you know, you can spend $60-$80 for a super... super easy on the wallet one, and it should do its job. Or you can get up there and spend thousands of dollars. And now your applications will dictate what you need. But if I have your ear, I'd say invest in clean power. Since Nikki Show is no stranger to dropping names, I would say Furman is a great place to start. They have been doing it for a long time, and it is on every traveling rig for every guitarist, musician, probably in America, possibly the world. But beyond that, it will give your equipment a longer lifespan. Well, I appreciate you having me on, and I hope I haven't confused anyone out there with the clean power debate, but and everything else, appreciate you giving me the time.
Well, thank you for the time, and thank you for the debate. It has been wonderful.
My name is Cole Guisto. I'm 26 years old, and I am a student at Pierce College. And I own a recording studio.
So that makes you qualified for this show.
I guess so, yeah.
Yes. So you do own a recording studio, so that makes you an engineer. Would I be correct?
Engineer, producer, musician, songwriter, yeah.
All of that. So what kind of instruments do you play?
I play guitar. I play bass. Harmonica is my main instrument.
Harmonica is your main instrument? Seriously? Do you have one on you? No. Do harmonica players usually carry one on them?
You know, normally there is, but I was actually using it this morning, so it's on my table.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I would love to hear that. I would love to. Well, you have to be good because if harmonica is your main instrument.
Well, I've been playing harmonica since I was like 2.
Shut up.
My first one was like my grandfather gave me a harp like this big.
Oh my God.
So I've been playing it since I was a little kid.
Oh, that's fun. I need to hear this. That would be awesome. So, pre-production. People have said that it has been one of the most neglected yet vital stage of the recording process. And I believe this to be true because I've been in the recording studio and I have encountered people who, because of lack of preparation, have completely fallen apart. So I would like to give a few tips and a few, you know, helpful hints about things that you can do to get yourself into, you know, get yourself so that when you get into the studio that you are as efficient as possible and you spend the least amount of time recording. You have the best possible everything going into it so you can just record and be creative.
Right.
That's very important to me. And this is, you know, work done by the artist, the producer, and the engineer, everyone that's involved in this process of pre-production.
I would agree.
So, with that. Yeah. So, what does pre-production mean to you?
Well, I'd start by saying I definitely agree with the pre-production area being neglected by most musicians and artists that come into studios. That being prepared is key. I think it's more important than your equipment. It's more important than all of it is to be prepared. I mean, obviously, it's not as important as the songs you're going to be bringing in, but if you're prepared in a studio, it enables you to just come in and, like you said, just start creating music. That way, you don't have to like. A lot of bands.
Well, even the song is important. Everything. You want to be prepared with, you know, you want to know your song.
Right. I mean, even being prepared is like what you're going to start with. Like, what instrument's going to go in? Are you going to use a scratch track? Like, for example, a song that has.
Have you already made a demo of the song previously?
Yeah, can you show the engineer the demo you've done so he has ideas? Does everybody in the group know their parts before they come in? I mean, like, a lot of things I do to get prepared is I actually take notes and I bring my notes with me to the studio so I know. Like, I could just look at the paper and say, okay, I'm going to start with a guitar on this song, and then after that we're gonna need a bass and then another part and then so on and so forth.
Of course. As far as creating a song, you are creating one song. You have music, you have lyrics, and you have arrangement. What do you do to become 100% ready?
Well, if you're the artist coming in to record, to be ready, I would say, like, if you know you're gonna be going to the studio, start like 2 weeks before you go in and do regular rehearsals with your group, or if you're playing by yourself, just practice those songs over and over again. And then the night before you go to the studio, this is how I do it. I set the group up as if we're already in the studio, and we say, okay, we're going to record this part first. And so the person would play it, like on their guitar or whatever, and then we would go from there. And so that you know exactly what you're going to be playing. And
it's almost like a dress rehearsal for a play.
Exactly.
Yeah.
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 And then as far as like on the engineer's side of being ready, checking all your equipment.
Oh, got to know your equipment.
Because if you have someone coming in to pay and you get in there and all of a sudden you realize like a tube is blown or something's not working right, or there's latency problems, or anything like that, that can happen. It will always happen, so you want to make sure that beforehand, the same thing, kind of dress rehearse.
Exactly.
Know? And just be prepared the night before, and then you're ready to go.
As an engineer, you need to know your equipment. You need to know what you're doing. You can't just sit there and twiddle your thumbs. You're expected to do work.
Yeah, and knowing your equipment is very vital. Definitely vital. Like, if you buy new equipment, day before you're going to be recording somebody, I would say not use the equipment, because you don't know it. Like, if you have already a good tube preamp and you order a new one and it comes in the you know, that next day, I would say, like, if you want to use it, go ahead, but it's going to be risky because you don't know how it's going to turn out. You don't know the tone that it's going to produce. You don't know if the tube that you have in it is the right tube because, I mean, obviously you can switch out. There's hundreds of different types of tubes out there that are all 12AX7, which most, you know, the equipment uses, guitar amps use, preamps use. And so each one kind of gives its own small tone to everything. So, yeah.
Right.
Being prepared, that's what I would say.
Oh, yes. So, I mean, what kind of style of music do you play as far as an artist goes?
I prefer blues. I have been playing it, like I said, since I was a kid. And I've been, you know, I grew up, my parents always listened to blues. My grandmother, actually, she turned me on to, like, Son House and Robert Johnson and all these old blues guys, you know. And so I kind of, like, figured I thought that's what music was when I was a kid. And then I started hearing all this other stuff. And my mom's ex-husband was actually really into country music. And I don't know, I guess it kind of, I don't like country music, like, at all, really. I like old country music that's more along the lines of, like, that's more blues roots, you know?
Not so much into the twang.
No, I can't stand.
Yeah.
Like, especially new country music
that comes out. I'm not about country music at all.
No, not at all. But yeah. I play, you know, typical rock and roll. I play in metal bands. I'm actually in 3 bands, so I do play a wide variety of
music. Very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
But blues is the main one.
So, very cool. And as an engineer, what type of music are you working on, and what are you producing?
In my studio, because my personal studio isn't that big, I try to stay away from recording full bands. If I do get a band, I have a sister studio that I work at called Beer City Studios. And it's in Van Nuys. It's actually really close to your place. It's down the street.
That's way cool. It's good to know. You can, like, record full drums there?
Yeah, we have a full drum tracking room. There's 2 tracking rooms there, so we can, if I do get a band, I can go in there, record the drums, and then take it to my home studio to record the rest of the stuff. But mainly I like to do singer-songwriter stuff. Like, a person with a guitar has some songs. That's my favorite to record. Yeah. I get a lot of hip-hop artists in there and rappers because they're, I don't mean to be mean, but they're like a dime a dozen. They always come out of everywhere when you put up a sign, I have a studio, you know. They're like the first ones to call. And the work's really easy. They give you a beat, and you just record their lyrics and record some ad-lib tracks to it and mix it together, and you're good. So I kind of like to go the easier route. In the other studio I work at, however, we work with full bands, which is a lot more challenging because there's more to work with, like, especially starting with a drum set. You have to track the drums, and positioning all the mics can take hours.
Oh, yeah. Setting up an entire drum set to record. I mean, there was a time when I was in school at Musicians Institute, there was 5 people in my class, including me, and we got it down to an hour to set up a drum set perfectly. But that first, like, couple weeks in there, it would take us all class time to set up the drum set. And that's what we were doing.
Right.
You know, it's like it's so funny how much time they worked with us just to get us prepared to go into the studio. And that's why I think pre-production is so important from every angle, beyond just the artist, but the engineer and the people in the studio as well, because it takes so much preparation and so much thought and work and collaboration and organization to really get a session together.
Yeah,
it's so important.
It is. Like, at Beer City, when we do bands, we dedicate at least 14 tracks to a drum set. So we always, you know, a lot of people will sit there and be like, we'll put up a room mic and then a couple overheads and then one, like, on the snare, one mic, and that's it. And that's all they're gonna do to mic a drum set. And it's not gonna get you a good tone,
because no.
Especially, like, okay, my preference is, like, take the kick drum. I have to use 2 mics on a kick drum.
What mics do you use on a kick drum?
That all depends. It depends on the size of the kick. It depends on, like, what mics we have there. Sometimes I bring my own in. I always put a condenser inside the kick. It's Sonoma. They have the little hole.
Mm-hmm. You just stick a mic
inside. And then normally...
It's close to the beater. You want to get close to the beater, but you want to get some, you know, inside resonance.
That's where you get the real...
Yeah, the thump.
The thud from, And then on the outside, my preference is a SM57 mic.
Okay, so you use one of those. I like the B52 from Shure. I love that one on a kick, and I've also...
The 58s are nice as well.
Yeah, 58s, because it can handle just that loud pressure.
Yeah,
they're meant to take that.
For me, though, the 57s are... Actually, I prefer a 57 on a kick and the snare.
I was going to say I've used 57s to mic top and bottom snare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's another thing. You have to have two mics on the snare.
Mm-hmm, and you have to make sure phasing. If you're going to be using 2 mics, you need to consider phasing, too.
Phase the mic out because of the frequency, right?
Exactly.
It's mainly if you're using the same type of mic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you use 257s,
then
and it really goes in with condensers. If you use, like, 2 stick condenser mics for, like, overheads, you have to run a phaser. And then that goes into having separate pre's, because a lot of things don't. Like, a lot of interfaces don't have phasers for every little thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was saying knowing your pre's are really important. But no, we put a mic on every drum and every cymbal, and then we have 2 overheads.
2 overheads
and I only like I only like to use 1 room mic.
Okay, I've used 2.
I think sometimes with 2, like, recordings I've done where other people have mic'd the drum sets, I've always had to cancel out one of the room mics.
Okay, yeah, I'll usually do a left and a right and just kind of barely. It's like barely.
Just to pick up the room sound. But so that would be the process of recording drums, and it takes about an 2 hours to set up everything, I would say, because you have to actually move the mics. Even like a centimeter can make
there's
a
only
difference.
One person setting up a drum kit, or one or two people, one person really knowing what they're doing and the other person just helping.
Right.
It's like that can be 2-3 hours alone right there.
Right Oh yeah, we use 2 engineers, unless it's the mic. Mainly we use 2 engineers for drum tracking, because you have one in the sound room and the other one's out there moving mics around and being like, is this sound good?
What about here?
No,
about
moving
here?
An inch to the left. Okay.
It's like you're trying to find the sweet spot on an amp. Is it here?
Yeah.
Is it here? Is it here?
Yeah, it goes into everything.
Yeah.
Anything you record,
mm-hmm.
you have to have that.
Mm-hmm.
And then for like for guitar, for the main rhythm guitars, I use two mics as well. I like to use a condenser, and then, well, 57s work, 58s work. It's the other mic is not that I'm not too picky on, but the mainly the condenser, and I actually run two channels on it, direct in,
mm-hmm.
and so that yeah. way you have like you can pan the track out, make it sound really full, and yeah, bass is always direct in. I've tried miking bass amps before, and it just doesn't work right.
You have to have a really good mic for that. The only time, at least for me, I've gotten a good mix with a mic by Sennheiser. I think it's a 421, wow. Sennheiser 421. And if I've mic'd a bass cab with that and then go DI and kind of get a nice mix between the two, I've noticed that that works. But otherwise, yeah. sometimes it's just kind of mud.
Yeah, I always just run direct in on the bass.
Yeah.
The bass that I use has active pickups, so going direct in, you're going to get an awesome sound, yeah. no matter what.
One of the main things is that studio time is not meant for songwriting or working through a piece of music.
Right.
When you get into the studio, you need to know what you're doing every second of that song.
That's why I said be prepared. Yeah, I've had people come in, and the band is sitting there, and the clock's running. They're paying by the hour, and they're sitting there trying to write a new part for a song.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there, like, just watching them, and they're being slow at it. They're not going at the speed they should. They should not even be writing parts.
No.
The song should have been done. I don't know. So it's like, if you come to that situation, and you're the artist in there, and you mm-hmm. realize you want to add something to the song, then can it, and don't record it right now. Just move on to the next one.
Yes.
Because you're paying for it. Come back later and pay. I mean,
that's the cool thing about working with someone who has multiple songs. It's like, if they come in there with maybe three or four songs they want to record, it's like, okay, I know this piece to this song really right. well. I know this piece to this song. And you can go through, and at the end of the day, you can piece together over an adequate amount of studio time when they know what they're doing, some really great stuff.
Yeah.
You really want to establish, you know, the feeling or the mood of whatever music you're trying to make.
Right. That's an important part. Okay. Mood. I've been in recording studios that just have white walls, like bare walls. Like, I'm not saying here, you know, you need more time to decorate, but you should. In a studio, okay. In all the studios I've ever recorded in, like me personally going there to make music, the best stuff comes out when you're really relaxed. And if you're in, I won't mention any names, but a friend of mine has a studio, and it's a little studio, it's not that big, but I was engineering in there one time, and it seems so like nerve-wracking when you're in there, because there's nothing on the walls. It's just like equipment and then white walls, and
yeah.
you're like, okay, you know, and like the studio I work at, it's completely decorated. I mean, there's not an inch of the wall that doesn't have something on it. It's just completely decorated.
Yeah.
And then it's got the soundproofing all over, you know, mm-hmm. but it's when you go in there, you feel really relaxed and you feel comfortable, and that
it adds a certain amount of comfortability and possibly yeah. something to pull creativity from.
Exactly. It makes you comfortable. That's the main thing. It's like yeah. at home, you're obviously comfortable where you're writing the songs. You're mm-hmm. probably pretty comfortable. So why shouldn't you be when you're recording them?
That's true. That's very true. You know, you're trying to get the best performance possible. You want right. to be as comfortable as possible to go there.
I don't know. There's a lot that goes into people's moods and mindsets when they go into a studio.
Of
and
course.
I would say that's another key. Being prepared and then being comfortable.
Yeah.
And that's, in my opinion, that's more important than the equipment, because you could be recording to a little 8-track recorder, and if everybody's like really calm and really like relaxed and they're prepared, you can get something great just off an 8-track recorder.
No, it's true. It's yeah. true.
So using some little, like, hell, the first album I ever worked on with a band, we used as a microphone, you know, those little $10 mics you can buy at like Target for computers, like to talk into.
Yeah.
We literally used one of
we
those
have, like,
for most
of the
recording.
Like an 1/8 inch in or something.
Yeah, and it came out pretty well. We used this old tube amp that I had, and we ran it in somehow. And this is before I even like knew what the hell I was doing with recording. And yeah, we ran it in for this old tube that like, I think it even had a blown tube in one part of it. So like only one of the channels would work or something like that. And we recorded to this. We borrowed this, I don't know, I think it was a Tascam digital workstation thing, you know?
Yeah.
We just used this little cheap mic with this old tube preamp and that thing, and right. recorded a whole album on it. So
inspiration comes from the
yeah,
most interesting places.
It was a challenge.
Of course.
It came out, and it's pretty cool.
Very cool. You know, yeah. I guess we all have things that we're proud of in the studio that, you know, we've done, and like, that was done right, you know? Do you have an experience like that where you were in the studio and you really feel like that was done right, and I wish every session was like that?
We were in a studio with my group, the Hangover Bandits, and it was like, this was a few years ago. We were in the studio, we were working at the studio. We weren't even supposed to be recording there. We were actually kind of like, the band was interning, and we were doing songs for a film. Like, we were just doing the music for it,
mm-hmm.
and we had wrote this song, and one of the second engineers, not even the main engineer, was in there. It was late at night, and everything was still mic'd up for us from the day earlier, And we just started playing the song, and I guess the guy's name is Lou, he just hit record really quick. Didn't even adjust the settings, left it where it was. And we came out with a song that it came out so well because none of us knew we were being recorded. We were just jamming this new song, and we had everything, and it just came one take, just perfect. And it was like, it was awesome, man. But then I've had other times where, like, I was trying to do a lead guitar part for this song, and I've been working all day trying to get it. And again, it was late at night. The same guy, Lou, was just sitting there. And this is where he messed up, though. We sit down, and I tell him, just roll the track one more time. And the amp's still in there. You know, everything is ready to go. All you have to do is hit record. So he rolls the track, and I played probably the best take I've ever done on that song. It was the whole song, all the way through. And then when we were all finished, everybody was like, oh my god, that was, like, perfect. It was amazing, you know? I was doing things on the guitar I didn't even know I could do. And then I look over at Lou, and he goes, should I have recorded that?
Oh, shut up.
And we're all like... Great, you know. So then he's like, "We'll try it one more time," and this is the take we actually stuck with. The second time, it was nowhere near as good. It was good, but it wasn't. I don't know. The other time was just like perfect, and so he missed it.
See, engineers need to be on top of it.
Always hit record, no matter what. Even if the people tell you, "Okay, I'm just gonna try it. Don't record this."
You need to
don't tell them you're recording it and just record it.
Because there's so many different ways that you can just, like, you know, there's different takes on one track. You can have different takes on one track, and it's so easy to just either that or Apple Z. If it wasn't good, chuck it. But always press that button. Take that risk.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's been times I've been recording, and the same situation come up where a singer will tell me, I'm just going to try it. Just play me through the whole thing, and I'm going to do the verses, and I'm just going to try them right now. But don't record me. I get nervous, you know, and just I need to know when I'm recording. And I'm like, okay, I won't record you. And so I hit record, and he went through and did it perfect. And then he's like, I'm ready to do it. I'm like, you already got it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like,
done.
He was a little upset, but I guess when he finally heard the finished product, he was happy with it. I always record.
Manipulating artists. That's a good one.
Yeah,
you know, in a situation where, you know, if you're playing two roles as an engineer and a producer, and you kind of have to fill those shoes of two people,
right?
You know, and you're working with a temperamental artist, you need to kind of have a way of manipulation where you work with them. You kind of pull it out of them.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, now, this sounds kind of wrong, but the artist is not always right, and they don't always know what's best for their own songs, even, because sometimes the engineer, being the outside opinion, the outside ear to it, he hears something that the rest of the band has overlooked or just simply hasn't heard, and then, you know, their input can change the sound of a
song. Absolutely. Well, that brings up a whole new topic on collaboration, which is so vital to this process. You know, I absolutely think that multiple ears, the better. You know, the more people, the better. So who are some of the people that you collaborate with in the studio and as an artist? And
Okay. There's a punk band that I play parts for all the time. Like, they always want me to play harmonica or do... Like, whenever they have a song that they're like, I kind of need a blues lead for it, they ask me to come over and play. And then I've had them on my recordings, and I collaborate with them. I have a band that's not really a band, I'd say. It's kind of weird. It's it started out as just a group of musicians playing music, and I've kept it alive for about 7 years now. And so,
wow.
Yeah, and
congratulations.
The lineup has constantly changed. Even on, we have an album out right now, and on this album, every song has different people on it. Like, this guitar is done by this person, and bass was done by, like, some songs have two bass tracks on them. And they just, like, it's a real eclectic album we did.
Wow.
But,
so as a whole, how does the album sound like as a whole? Does it still sound like a one cohesive piece?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the way we did it, the way I kind of did it, because I engineered the whole thing and mastered it and all that. It took me 2 years to finish it, but we made it flow like a... Like Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd, you know, how it just kind of, like, flows from one track to the next.
Right.
This does the same thing. Like, one song will just kind of fade out, and then some sound effects will come up, and then the next song will come right
into
it.
Like, acts as just one continual piece.
And it's very cool. Like, a lot of the instruments on it aren't even real instruments. We were using everything we could possibly think of. There's a washboard on one of the tracks.
All right.
So there's this little instrument my friend made. It has, like, three strings or four strings on it or something like that, and we call it an Alf harp because his name was Alfred, and it looks kind of like a harp.
Yeah.
So we use this. I use the it's, you can't tune it, so the strings are just in this random tuning. And I was like, I'm gonna put this on this song, and it was the song was beat driven, so we didn't have a drummer for it. So I just kind of played these notes on it in weird spots, and then I put a bunch of reverb and these weird effects, and then I reversed half, like, every other one of them. This is gonna sound really lame, but I used to be a Boy Scout, and Boy Scout's motto was be prepared. So I would say, to sum it up, if you're going into a studio and you're going to be paying money and they do get pricey, just be prepared. Don't go in there with, you know, chopped up ideas and, like, a riff here and a riff there and think you're going to be laying down a song. Have complete things ready to go. Have, you know, have the ability to play the song over and over and over flawlessly before you go to record it. And as an engineer, know your equipment. Know the artist you're bringing in, how loud they normally get. how many members there are, you know as much as you can about your artists that you're going to be having in, like, study, research them. Look up on Facebook and MySpace and find their page and listen to their songs. Listen to stuff they already have.
And, yeah.
And know, like, where you're going to be, they're going to be coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, know your equipment.
Right. You know, the more familiar everyone is with everything, the better and smoother the process is.
Right. And never try to overdo yourself. Keep it simple. Like, that works in most cases. Like, one of my favorite groups is the White Stripes. Right?
Very simple.
And their first two albums.
Very stripped down.
They're just garage. They're just like.
Was there any bass in it at all? There was no bass.
It was a drummer and a guitar player. Yeah. And they played piano and they played like percussion parts and harmonica and things like that. And they kept it very, very simple. And those recordings to me are still great. You know, they sound better to me than overprocessed stuff that I hear these days. So.
Absolutely.
And that's the other thing. Don't overprocess everything. That gets really annoying. And stay away from autotune.
My name is Adam Scott Hunsaker, also known as Lyrical State.
All right, so what kind of music do you play?
Basically, I just do hip-hop and R&B, and, you know, kind of a soul feel to it as well, and that's what I do.
Do you write your own lyrics?
Yes, I do, definitely. I write, you know, singing lyrics and also as well as my own rhymes, and I make beats as well, and the whole shebang, you know.
So with making beats, what programs do you use? What is your process?
I like to use Reason, and it really depends on what type of beat I'm making, like if it's like an updated beat or if it's like a soul beat, you know. So if it's like a sample type bass beat, you know, like soul bass, I would like to use like some Blue Note Jazz, you know, some riffs off of that, maybe get a couple nice breaks out of some nice records, and you know, just put it together, put my own spin on it.
So you do sample other people's music?
Yeah, I do. If I'm making soul music, you know what I mean? I would do sample because, I mean, that's how they did it in the 90s. And that's, you know, the classic beats that you hear on the radio, you know, that's where it all came from, you know?
So what kind of samples do you take or what have you used before?
Just a lot of Blue Note stuff as well, you know, some Motown records like Al Green, you know.
As far as pre-production, what does that mean to you?
Well, it really means, well, in the aspect of, you know, pre-production and making a song, I guess it would be like thinking of the concept, just really trying to paint a picture, just trying to think, where am I going to take the audience or the people listening to this music? Where am I going to take them? What type of emotion I want them to feel? You know, how I'm going to place it together, you know, like little, where my stops are going to be, where the little, you know, the parts where you could really shine with your personality, where you want to put those pieces in. So pretty much about that.
Right. Well, you know, I've definitely heard that pre-production is one of the most neglected pieces of the entire process from start to finish. And one of the things that pre-production can really help is decreasing the amount of studio time and productivity within thereof.
Definitely
and
agree.
You are an engineer and you have worked in studios with other artists and performers and stuff like that. So give me some stories or examples of like when you've been in the studio and people have come in and that what happens when you are not prepared.
Oh man, a total disaster. That's what happens when they're not prepared. Honestly, oh, I mean, it's probably every engineer's biggest pet peeve, you know what I mean? Especially when they act like they're really hyped about it, and they're like, yeah, I'm going to take on the song, it's going to be over, you know? And then, like, take 20 million, they're, like, on, you know, the second line still, and you're just like, oh, my God, you feel like smashing your head against the keyboard, like, doom, doom. But anyways, you know, but that's what would happen. You know, I would get an artist to come into my studio, and they had, like, this big ego about themselves. You know, they acted like they had their song all together, like, yeah, it's the best thing ever, you know? And that's what would happen, you know? Unfortunately, it would be not the best song, one, and two, because, you know, they just didn't put the time into it to memorize it or, you know, just put any type of style or any type of feeling or any type of topic. Right. I mean, in hip-hop, you deal with mediocre artists, unfortunately, a lot of the time. I mean, we all start from somewhere, but it's one thing if you're just, like, all over the place. Like, you have no topic, you have no...
You
substance.
Come in with this vague ideas exactly. And expect magic from the engineer.
Exactly. They just lay it down. They're like, okay, I'm done. You know what I mean? You're like, no, you're not. You know? So, yeah, that's pretty much my Nightmare on Elm Street story right there.
So, you know, what pre-production means, I guess, to me is the work done by everyone, from the artist, from the producer, from the engineer, before the actual process gets done.
Definitely. If it's going to be a really good song, then you should really plan out everything. It's kind of like construction. Like, you construct a building, you know, you're going to make some plans for it. You're not just going to get like some nails out and some wrecking balls and just start, or else everything's going to fall on top of you. You know what I mean? So that's what, you know, tends to happen when people don't prepare.
Oh yeah. It's so important. It makes things so much more cost effective because studio time is very expensive, especially when you're, you know, working in a really nice studio. It's going to be even more expensive with high tech equipment, much more expensive things. It's a great use of time. I think
probably you should spend at least twice the amount of time in pre-production than you do in the studio. It's like you should really not be spending much time recording each piece. You go in there knowing what you want and then spending more time in the mixing aspect, putting everything together, and you know, but definitely know what you're going for, what feeling you're going for.
Exactly.
You know, and some artists come in with a whole bunch of songs. Oh, I've written 20 songs. Well, you need to figure out what 3 or 4 out of those 20 songs are even good or even up to recording standards. So
I completely agree with you.
So much work, so much work. So you definitely want to establish a feeling in pre-production. You want to know what sound you're going for. You want to know the length of each song. That's so important because you can't go in there, record a song that you think is going to be, you know, a nice 3 minutes, 30 seconds, perfect radio ready track, and it's either 6 minutes too long or it's only like 2 minutes long.
Exactly. A lot of artists lack structure too, like how you're saying, you know what I mean? They don't know where the bridge is supposed to come in or how long a chorus is really supposed to be. I mean, there really isn't a super strict recipe for it, but you do kind of want to stick to some guidelines. You know, you want to have like a 16 bar verse and
structure
such like
is
that.
So important. Definitely.
Definitely. Completely.
Anything else on song structure? Because that's really important.
Definitely, because I mean, or else there won't be any emotion in your track. They'll just fall off, you know what I mean? Your song will fall off and people will be like, okay, next track, or they'll just throw your CD, use it for like a cup coaster or something. Right. You know, we don't want that, especially if we're spending all this money on studio time.
Oh, of course, of course. You know, a lot of times in pre-production, you're doing a lot of collaborating. At least, you know, you'll have an artist and maybe you'll bring in another writer or you bring in a producer. So how do you feel about collaboration and who do you collaborate with, if anybody?
I love collaborating. Honestly, just whoever I collaborate with, it gives me like a different emotion, different vibe to some music. And it honestly, like, especially with writing, on the writing aspect, it just gives me ideas that just would normally take me a lot more time to pop into my mind. I just, like, I don't know, it just feels like so, you know, like cohesive. Everything just feels right, you know, when I collaborate. I collaborate with people. I collaborate with this one guy named Exile. He does beats for like Mobb Deep and 50 Cent, Jurassic 5. And as well, I collaborate with a couple other members of this label that I'm starting called Trackslayers Entertainment. I collaborate with this artist named Dutch, who's a very talented rapper, and he also makes beats and engineers. And, you know, we collaborate and it just magic happens sometimes. And
so when people come in to record, how familiar are you with a click track? And have you come into problems with people not being able to play to one?
Oh, man. Well, see, I haven't recorded too many artists that actually play their own instruments. Normally, they all depend on me to do everything under the sun.
Wow.
Which is, you know, it's interesting, but it takes a lot of time. You know what I mean? But yeah, I have definitely ran into people that don't really know how to work with their tempo at all. They just have no rhythm, unfortunately. I mean, they know how to play a couple licks, but then if they play it for too long, it's just like, okay, no, there's no tempo. You can't go to that. So it ends up I have to do the magic and chop and cut here and sparkle here, and,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
That's what ends up happening. So
yeah, I mean, the pre-production process, although long and a lot to it, can be a really fun and creative atmosphere, at least with the writers and the producers and all of that comes around, and you get inspired by other people and you never really know what could come out of it, and it's fun and very surprising. And even if you're working with a, like, okay, you have a specific feel, you want to have a specific mood, but I mean, there's certain fun things that can just surprise you.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had any surprising fun moments come out of
Oh, definitely. Yeah. All the time. I mean, you know, sometimes the best things happen. It's good to have structure, but at the same time, you got to be yourself. You know what I mean? You got to put your personality into it. And sometimes, you know, somebody will say something. Well, like in hip hop, sometimes you do like ad libs and stuff like that, and you'll make like comments to what you're saying, you know? And sometimes my friends will say like, that's the most random, funny thing, but it'll go perfect in the song, you know? And everybody in the studio will be laughing like constantly for like over half an hour about it, you know? They just keep on saying it to each other, you know? So yeah, those moments, I mean, definitely make music a lot more fun, you know, after all the work.
Yeah, those funny moments in between. Take 17.
Yeah, exactly.
Take 25. Oh my God, can't you get this right? So, you know, you say that your style of music is more hip hop and, you know, R&B, and you do samples and stuff like that.
Yes, ma'am.
What are you working on right now?
Wow. I am constantly working. Pretty much, I am working on I'm working on a double CD. I'm working on one side that's just soul beats. So that way people that like that 90s feel have that 90s feel to it. And then another side that's just updated with like the 808 stuff and all that other stuff that really isn't what I'm very passionate about, but I'm thinking in a marketing aspect as well. You know what I mean? So that way I'm really marketable and I have multiple ways of showing my music. So that's what I'm doing pretty much with my music.
That's important, you know, to have different faces, different sides, different ways to market yourself. It's all very important.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I try to think of concepts that aren't completely just like over, you know, overused. Like, hip hop is notorious for that. You know what I mean? They'll have like a million songs about going to the club or drinking or like your car, or just stuff that doesn't have substance. And that's why I really like 90s music, because it was a lot more poetic, a lot more about like what you feel, what the emotion is. You know what I mean? I mean, you could even have a song about going to the club, but you can have it in a way where it's like you're telling a story. Like, this is what happened when we went to the club, but in a way that's like more relatable. You know what I mean?
I know.
Like, not everybody has like $1 million
well,
or like
the, if I hear another Usher song about, you know, making love on the club, I'm not gonna be happy.
Yeah,
like,
that's right.
You need to branch out. It's just too much.
That's right. Like, I have this song that I'm making. It's this soul song. It's called Wait a Minute. And it's talking about how when you know, when I was with my girlfriend, pretty much, I'm sure every guy kind of relates to this. You know, you're ready to go. You got your clothes on. You're ready to go. But your girlfriend just keeps on telling you just to wait a minute. You know what I mean? Wait a minute. She's got to do her hair. She's got to do her makeup one more time. Wait a minute. This the shirt isn't one I really like. So I really talk about that in the song, you know, and I have like this soul sample from Wait a Minute, Mr. Postman in it. But I just took the wait a minute. So it sounds pretty cool. And it repeats.
That
and
then, sounds cool.
Yeah, so it comes together.
Or the famous line, do I look fat in this?
So, yeah, that's a... what I was trying to do with that one.
That's very cool. That's very cool. I guess, like, knowing your equipment as an engineer.
Definitely.
Just, you can't say that, you know, you're an engineer and then go in there and not know your equipment. It's so huge. So you're using Reason. Mm-hmm. And so tell me a little bit about Reason and how that works.
Oh, man. It is...
it's very in-depth.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a little too complicated sometimes, you know what I mean? Because it's, like, literally a virtual rack. So, like, you flip it around, there's actual wires that you can plug into holes, and it's, like, it's insane, you know what I mean? You could do side-chaining and all these crazy effects, and there's hundreds and maybe thousands of instruments, because you could even get more online, and it's just, like, insane. So if you like to play the keyboard, you could do that thing on
it. So there's, like, you know, keyboards, and there's drums, and there's, you know, guitars.
There's record... effects, there's everything under the moon you could think of. You can just put in wave files, you can export your song, import it back in, and then put real-time automation in it. What's really good about the automation, it works in like a block mode, so you can just draw it in even if you want, and you have like the perfect type of automation you want, and then you can just copy that block that was in the automation and just put it down to another instrument, so that way they all match, you know, all your automation. So it's pretty cool. That's what I love about it.
Have you ever used Reason within Pro Tools, like going through?
Oh yeah, Rewire.
Yeah, Rewire.
I've used it. I've used Rewire, definitely. It's just my computer isn't like super high tech, so I run out of DSP. You know what I mean? So what I end up doing, I export, I bounce all the tracks, and if I want to hook them up more with like some high end VSTs, like the Waves Bundle or something like that, then I'll just break it down inside Nuendo or Cubase or whatever I feel like using at the moment. You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Very cool. So what other equipment do you have in your studio as far as, like, I don't know, outboard gear or instruments, or what do you got going in there?
Pretty much I have, you know, some pretty big M-Audio monitors and nice subwoofer for my low end. I think it's a Pioneer. And, you know, I have a MXL Muigami 24-karat gold edition, the one that's on the basement. And I have a Presonus channel strip, you know, give that nice compression.
Give me a little preamp. Channel strip?
Off the top of my head, I forget which model it is, but it's
blue. Is it like an 8-channel, or is it just a single channel strip?
It's a single channel, I think.
Very
I think it's
just one channel. I'm rocking the Presonus Eureka.
Eureka. Eureka.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's nice. It is very nice.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really work with too many inputs at the same time. I don't really need to, because I mostly just record vocals and I make my beat like separately in Reason and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Or if I just want to record, like, you know, like just a guitar or something. Yeah. Sometimes I'll have people come in with like a real bass. Like my friend Richard, his dad played for the B-52s. And he comes in, he has some of his dad's basses and does little licks and stuff like that once in a while. It's kind of cool. But,
Very cool.
Yeah. So,
very cool.
It's cool. Fun times.
So do you have any experience with any other studios?
Yeah, I've been to Clearwater Audio, Universal Music Group. Paid for some of my studio time, Clearwater Audio, and they're also filming like an EPK of what my label is doing. But yeah, I mean, I loved it and hated it, because sometimes their engineer was a little rude, you know what I mean? We run into people that are kind of,
because these are pro studios.
Yeah, they're pro studios. Pretty much the reason he was rude was he was very short with the guys that were in there, but as soon as the girl came in there, he completely turned into a whole different person. He was like, hi, let me get you some water, let me go over here. And then when he was to me, I was like, hey, how you doing, man, trying to be friendly. I was like, oh yeah, I'm an engineer too. He didn't even want to hear me, you know. He just looked at me like, whatever, fool, get out of here, you know? Get in the booth and drop your rhyme right now. So yeah, that's what one of the things I ran into. So professionalism.
Of course. That's huge. I mean, I guess no matter where you're at, if you're an engineer in a home studio like I am here, if, you know, you're working out of your basement, or if you're in a pro studio, got to be professional.
Definitely. Because, you know, in the end, you know, the way that you conduct yourself may make or break business, you know, you got to really think, how would you like to be talked to? How would you like to be conduct business with? Would you like someone to be rude to you, or would you like someone to be involved in your track, believe in you, you know, give you encouraging advice? You know what I mean? Don't. One thing I've really learned when I record somebody, if there's something I don't like about it, I'm not just like, it sucks. I tell them, hey, maybe you can do this to it or that to it. You know what I mean?
So that's that way the sign of a producer. That's the producer in you.
So that way it's positive. You know what I mean? It's something that can be built from it. Because if you just tell someone, I don't like it, and you don't tell them why, they don't know why. And they just start doubting themselves, and the recording just goes downhill from there, you know?
Yeah, it always needs to be an uplifting, positive experience. You know, people, these artists are coming in, and, you know, regardless, they've written these songs that for them, they have their heart in them. They've they've put themselves in there. And, you know, I think that everyone deserves that amount of professional consideration. And
I completely agree.
Absolutely. Any good books you can recommend? Have you ever, do you know any, like?
Off the top of my head. Well, honestly, I think the best thing that you can do is really look at multiple opinions, people, about production, because they're going to tell you multiple things. And I hate it when people tell you that you have to put this knob on this ratio or this knob on this, because I mean, there is a starting point you kind of want to go to, but you really need to hear it, because everyone's voice has different dynamics. Everyone has different frequency range in their voice.
Right. No,
everyone
that's so
is
true.
Sometimes louder on some words and lower on some words, and you don't want to overcompress at the same time, because then you're going to squash all the dynamics. You know what I mean? So, you know, nobody has a real preset sound to them. And even the same artist will sound different from one song to another. You know what I mean?
So you have your basic settings, and then you kind of just tweak it as necessary. Just, like, close your eyes and listen to the music and go from there, tweak from there.
And that's what a lot of people have forgot about, listening to the music. Oh, you know, there's so much technology out these days that show you a picture and show you this and that. And people don't understand that it's really about your ear, because, they're not going to see the picture of your vocal, you know what I mean, when they play your song.
Like, oh, that's a good waveform right there. I really like that waveform. It's like, no, it's not about that. It's like, close your eyes. Do you feel this? Do you like this? Does this sound good to you?
Exactly. Or else you get those mixes that are just, like, mediocre, you know? Right. They're in there, but they're just not, they don't jump out at you in the right way, you know?
Yeah.
So
can't just have 20 mediocre songs. It's better to have 3 really great ones than just a whole album of mediocre crap.
Exactly. And try to perfect your music. You know what I mean? Don't, you know, settle for like, oh, this is okay. You know, no, don't do that. You know what I mean? Just, like, really practice it. You know, if you recorded it one time and you still aren't happy with it, you can always go back again and record it. It's not like you recorded it and you never can record it again.
Yeah, it's not set in stone. You always got to strive for greatness.
Exactly.
You know, music is about dreams and reaching the unattainable and writing it and making other people feel it. So go there. Allow yourself to go there.
Exactly. And never think that you're at the top of your game, honestly, because that's when you hit a plateau. You know, you always want to find something you can be better at. You always want to believe that there's something you can improve at. So that way you can improve. You know what I mean?
I pretty much, I'm made up a hybrid word. Okay. Because I see a lot of, like, artists that are on TV and such, and they have a very fake persona about them, or their whole image is really fake. Like, especially with rappers, you know, it's like you see that video on TV and they have, like, money flying around everywhere. Like they have
the yachts.
Yeah, all the yachts.
Big,
like, oh my God.
Girls,
and like all the jewelry. Like, they have it all. Like, they're just, like, living life. They're like billionaires. Like, you should have known about them before they were even on TV. But no, a lot of people do not know that these things, it's fake money. These are paid models. Some of them not even paid. Some of them, they're getting exposure, but not even exposure that's probably going to even get them in the job, unfortunately.
Right.
But so what I made up, I call it Foch, which means phony fresh. It's a hybrid word. So like that fake money in your video, that shit is Foch. Like, I'm sorry, it is. It's Foch. So that's one of the words that I've made up.
I like it. I like it. Sounds really cool. I think I might start using that, you know. I think I might use that.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. And you guys check me out. You know, go ahead and go onto Google and type in Lyrical State. It's one word. And I should be the number one hit right there with Traxlayers Entertainment. And I just want to give a shout out to Dutch and Marvin and K-Dub and all the cast supporting me. Mario, thank you from Universal Music Group. I appreciate all the love, man. And hopefully y'all are all blessed.
From KPCRadio.com, this has been your host, Nikki, and you've listened to One Track Mind.